9. What an idiot I was. They found her body the next day. They found her on a dirt road deep in the piney woods, southwest of Mammoth Falls. 2 hunters poaching deer out of season found her. She had taken a director's chair out of the Cherokee, taken her leather satchel, taken the gun out of the satchel, and shot herself. Not in the head, which would have been too obvious and messy for Libby, but neatly through the heart. She had done this, apparently, after making a small fire. The remains of a manila folder were found there. Stanton called several times, left messages on my machine. Susan called once. This seemed an appropriately half-hearted effort on their part. If they'd really wanted me, they would have sent someone over or come themselves, as the governor had the day we'd gone to Grace Junction so Uncle Charlie could get his blood pulled. Or as the police did that Monday evening. I was the last person to have seen Libby alive. They asked me why I thought she had done it. They asked whether she had seemed distraught. They asked if I believed there was any possibility of foul play. They did not press too hard. Jack Stanton was still governor. The Stanton campaign had come upon depressing times, and Libby was a well-known and certifiable lunatic. I know, I told them, that the normal thing for me to say would be, I wish I had known. I wish I could have done something to stop her. But with Libby, you never knew. And when she decided to do something, there was nothing you could do to stop her. And then, unexpectedly, I experienced a flood of intense, disorderly images of Libby in action. Her charts of Loretta McAllister's classes, Randy Colligan's head between her breasts, her gun in his crotch, her gray hair flying out from under her Australian bush hat, that ridiculous satchel. And I began to cry. She was, I told the police, a very close friend of mine. Libby's death made headlines, of course. It made the front page of the New York Times, lower right-hand corner, 2 paragraphs jumping to section B, page 10. Stanton aide takes life. My reflexive reaction was to go to work, to do spin, not from the campaign headquarters, but from Libby's little white frame house, where Jennifer Rogers and the rest of the dust-busting staff had barricaded themselves. I spent the next 36 hours answering their door, shooing reporters away. I spent the night with Jennifer, chastely. We didn't even talk much, lying atop the bed she shared with Libby, with our clothes on and our arms around each other. Libby, who rarely spoke anything but the truth, had been totally full of shit that last night. It was sort of shocking to see her so deluded. It was probably the only time I'd ever actually seen her crazy, and I'd been full of shit when I told the reporters, you never knew with Libby. You always knew with Libby. I knew that night, but I didn't quite believe it. She was, I figured, just implying the possibility of suicide. It was subtext, part of the role she was playing, part of the numbers she was running on the Stantons. She had been a great actress. I was furious with her, furious with myself, and bereft. It wasn't going to be a permanent thing with us, Jennifer said at one point, deep in the night. She knew that. In fact, she told me that. She said, I can't say I admire your proclivities, honey, but who am I to judge? She said I'd meet a guy after the campaign and fall in love, and maybe she'd get to be a godmother again. You'd be amazed the number of godchildren I have, she said, and I am a righteous fucking godmother. Henry, we all loved her so much. Why did she feel she had to do it? I don't know, I said, but I sort of knew, and I wondered why Jack Stanton hadn't yet withdrawn from the presidential race. Was it out of respect for Libby or because he was getting ready to act on what we'd given him? I accompanied Jennifer Rogers to the funeral, which was held in a prim, white-clabbered Presbyterian church in North Mammoth Falls. Libby had been the world's least likely Presbyterian. We sat in the front row, right-hand side. The Stanton sat in the front row, left. Libby's body, in an enormous walnut coffin, stood between us and the altar. The church was full, and I was distracted, uncomfortable, and angry with myself for not being able to devote all my attention to Libby. But I sensed Daisy was somewhere back there. I knew she had to be there. And during the organ playing and the opening hymn, I would awkwardly half twist my neck and try to scan the audience. I saw Richard, but not Daisy. It was driving me nuts. I was thinking that if she actually was there and took off before I could get to her, I would A, quickly check the downtown hotels, and then B, go to the airport and try to intercept her. Of course, A would probably be a waste of time. The best thing would be to go straight to the airport and wait. I'd have to get someone to take care of Jennifer. I began to scan for an appropriate muffin. Where was Peter Goldsmith from the dustbusting team? The windows were open, and the church was filled with late spring smells, renascent dogwood and azalea, their petals littering the path to the little church, and a clean, dry breeze from the west. There was a distant lawnmower in action, the weekday sounds of panel trucks, handyman going about their business, and I drifted that way, becalmed by the normality around us, unable to get any closer to Daisy, until Jack Stanton rose to speak.
"Olivia Holden was the oldest sister I never had," he began, with an ineffable sadness in his voice. "I hope it doesn't sound too presumptuous when I say that she loved me, us, Susan and me, like family, and we her." He chuckled a little. "Of course, any of y'all knew Libby, you know, that meant a lot of yelling. She never was satisfied with any of us. She demanded perfection from family. She wanted us to be bigger." His voice broke here. "But none of us could be as big as she was." A chuckle. "In a way." He stopped, searched the audience, and found me. "I feel personally responsible for this," he told me. "I guess I probably shouldn't. I guess I should say rationally that I could never live up to Libby's expectations. I live in the world, a pretty rough world, and I play by its rules, but..." He was still looking at me. "She was right. I could have been better. And it seemed that whenever I had a moment of weakness, she was always there. She wouldn't let me get away with anything." And now he looked at the full congregation again. "I guess that's what big sisters are for." Libby didn't leave any burial instructions. Susan and I had to think about what would be appropriate, and the choice seemed obvious. She will be cremated. She would have demanded a final flame-out. The audience laughed. Rather than a slow, sapping diminution in a field of daisies. She did not live a moment of her life at anything less than supersonic speed. She should leave the world as she lived in it, in a blaze of glory, throwing heat, dazzling us with her brilliance, her warmth, the amazing suppleness of her spirit. "I feel..." And he stopped here, unable to go on. Tears rolled down his cheeks. Different from the first tears I'd seen him shed that day in the Harlem Library, or any other tears since. The corners of his mouth were drawn down. His lower lip was quivering, like a child trying to keep composure, a boy trying to be a man. "I feel," he said, "as if a part of me has died. The bullet that exploded in Libby Holden's heart broke all our hearts." And then he whispered, "I cannot imagine life without that heart." He fled the lectern, collapsing in the front pew across from me, head in hands, as the choir rushed into Amazing Grace in a vain attempt to exorcise the anguish, to smother pain with glory. I was up quickly, scanning the crowd. I couldn't see Daisy. I saw a lot of people I knew, and then Susan was next to me, tugging me gently into a small room behind the altar, handing me an envelope with my name on it. "She left you this," she said. "It was inside the one she left for us." It was a small envelope from the hotel in New York that we'd stayed in during the primary. The note inside scrawled in scratchy ballpoint. Aw, shit, Henry. It was an empty threat. I could have never given them up. And I think I would have had to. But you were an inspired partner in crime. Most fun I ever had with a guy. So my run is done. Remember, oxygen. Big love, L. I handed it to Susan. She scanned it and then hugged me. "Jack's wrong," she whispered in my ear. "He isn't the one responsible for this. It was me. I was prosecuting a case, being a lawyer, being a hard ass. I was making the case for politics as usual. I kept hoping someone would rise for the defense, You're so good, I said, pulling back from her. You should never be the one who makes the case for politics as usual. Henry, she said, but I was out of there, out into the church, which was empty except for the crowd around the governor, shaking his hand, consoling him. Richard was there, but I didn't stop to say hello. I raced down the aisle out the door. And there she was, halfway down the path, in the dappled shade of a loblolly pine, arms crossed, in a black silk blouse and black pleated skirt, sheer stockings and low black heels waiting for me. I was terrified. So what happened? She asked, coolly. It's a long story, I said, and I promise I will tell it to you, tell you every last bit of it, and then I'll answer every one of your picky, acute questions. I'll do it until you are completely satisfied. I'll do it for years, for the rest of our lives, if that's how long you want. But only if you agree to several ground rules. First, I have to have the same rights as you do. And the most important is, I get to be as candid as you. And that means if I think the positives you did in Florida were just okay, I have a right. But that wasn't, I have a right to say it without my life, our lives crashing down around me. And second, the second ground rule has to do with what really was going on in New York. I will not fuck around with this anymore. The world, our world, moves just too fast to guarantee anything. But Daisy, I am just totally fucking in love with your eyes, the way you see things. No, shit. I'm so bad at this. It's more than that. I'm in love with whatever it is. She was beginning to frown, but not her eyes. With a thing that makes you who you are, your heart, with you, okay? I'm in love with you. Daisy, look, I'm kind of a mess. I have no idea who I am anymore. And this, I realized this the last few weeks without you. This is the thing I'm most certain of in my life, the way I feel about you. So those are the two ground rules. Deal, she said immediately and threw her arms around me. Did you actually think I was going to be a hard sell? Oh, God, Daisy, I said. Thank you. You think, she whispered in my ear, maybe we could go somewhere and continue this conversation with fewer clothes on? Perhaps I was wrong about sex and anticipation. There was also love. What we did that afternoon was neither campaign sex nor non-campaign sex. It was something different entirely. It filled my heart with joy. I shouted at the ceiling. I would like to dedicate this afternoon to the memory of Olivia Holden. I told her about Libby. I told her about Freddie Picker. I told her about our adventures in Miami, except for Claudia Gloria, and I made a quiet vow to myself that I would tell her about that too, someday. I told her about the scene with the Stantons. You're right, you know, she said. Picker will never survive this. Someone will, I said. There is going to be a president of the United States, but that's going to happen without me. Really? She said. I guess. Henry, we're political animals, she said. You're going to want to do this again. Maybe, but differently, I said. Without, it's not the conviction. Maybe it's without the ambition. Maybe it would work if I did it humbly. I don't know. You think it's possible to do it gracefully? Look, Daisy, I don't want to even think about that now. I want to go find that beach we used to talk about in New Hampshire and just have my hands all over you for a very long time. We were facing each other in bed, each up on an elbow. You know, she said, I don't think I was ever so happy as I was at that stupid Hampton Inn in Manchester, getting 3 hours of sleep each night. So let's go there, I said. Forget the Caribbean. You think? I thought about the dreary parking lot, the probability of bumping into Danny Scanlon, the last week of that campaign. It was getting on toward mid-April. There probably weren't any leaves on the trees up there yet. How about Bermuda, I said. A little early for Bermuda, she said. Might not get perfect weather. Okay. Jamaica? Ibiza? I don't care, wherever. I jumped out of bed, throwing on clothes. I'll tell you what. You get on the phone and start making arrangements. I've got one last piece of business to do here.
Which is? She asked.
Stanton was looking directly at me when he talked about being responsible for Libby's death, I said. He was apologizing. The least I can do is look directly at him when I quit. I'll be back soon. Maybe we should round up Jennifer and some of the other muffins, Libby's crowd, for a last ceremonial dinner. Henry? She was up, out of bed, an arm around my neck, a hand on my cheek. You may be all fucked up and confused about yourself, but I know who you are. And Libby did. And I'm sorry I was too damn proud to answer all your phone calls the past few weeks. And I'm sorry I wanted to hurt you after New York. And I do love you, but you've always known that. Daisy, this is the best thing that's happened since we kissed in front of the hotel on the day we held Harris under 40 in New Hampshire, she said. That was the first time you told me that you loved me, even if you didn't actually say it.
Henry, it must be mental telepathy, Jack Stanton said, when I found him in the kitchen of the mansion, rooting around in the refrigerator, fixing on a package of Oscar Mayer bologna. He was wearing jeans, a purple Western shirt, and running shoes. I just sent Tommy over to find you.
Look, we need to talk, I said, in a tone of voice he understood immediately.
I know that, he said, and we will. But we got some business first. Let me tell you what I've done. I've called Picker. I'm going to fly down there in about 15 minutes and hand him Libby's file, and apologize for compiling it, and tell him that I am pulling out of the race tomorrow. I've called a press conference for 11 a.m. out the backyard here. I figure that's what she would have wanted me to do. I nodded. You know what her note said to us? He asked, with a smile. It said, I am so fucking disappointed in you. Shape up. What did yours say?
It said she could never have given you up.
Henry, look. I know what you think, and what you're intended to do. But could you just do me one last thing? Come with me down to Florida. You were with her last week. You did the interviews. Picker may have questions. I figure we should make all the information we have available to him, and you represent a big part of that information.
All right, I said. Let me make a call first.
She okay, Daisy?
Stanton asked. I nodded.
Tell her I'm sorry about blowing her off in New York, too.
And so it was back to first things. Jack Stanton and me in a small plane, flying from dusk to darkness across the south. There was an airstrip in Caps just north of Tallahassee, and a wood-paneled station wagon with Pickerwood painted on the side waiting for us there. The driver was an ancient redneck, whose name also was Henry. It was a perfect deep south night, wet and wild, steam bath humidity, and flying insects. The windshield was stained to the point of opacity. Henry tried the wipers, which only made things worse.
Flying scum, he said. We're almost there.
We turned down a dirt road flanked by live oaks draped in Spanish moss. A quarter mile in, there was a white fence and a lawn behind it. In the distance stood an elegant white plantation house with three thick pillars and two curved, embracing wings. The dirt road turned to gravel beyond the fence. The gravel became a vast circular drive with a large plaster fountain in the middle, dripping gently, crystallizing the wetness of the night. Ancient yellow lights burned in the plantation house. There was the sound of a viola. Picker's younger son working on Sinfonia Concertante in his room upstairs. Every sound, every sense, seemed augmented. The slam of the car doors as we got out, the chatter of the insects, a distant owl. There was a misty moon several days past full. Libby, waning. Picker's older son, Fernando, greeted us at the door and promptly disappeared. Picker stood just behind him, dressed casually. Jeans, a striped button-down dress shirt with the sleeves rolled, bare feet. He was deeply tanned, the wrinkles around his eyes paler than his skin, and pronounced. His hair was slicked back as if he'd just gotten out of the shower. He ushered us into a den just off the main hall. There was a large console television in a corner, a dark green Chinese art deco rug, two flowered chintz sofas at right angles facing the television. The walls had bookshelves most of the way up, with a strip of plaid wallpaper,
the sort of thing you'd find in a cocktail lounge with a hunting motif above them, interrupted occasionally by brass sconces, which provided most of the quiet light in the room. Picker snapped off the television, asked us if we wanted a drink. Stanton said Diet Coke. I nodded, and Picker pulled a couple out of a small refrigerator in a cabinet below the bookshelves. He drank Orangina.
So, he said. Well, I've pretty much decided to get out of this thing tomorrow, Jack Stanton said.
He and I were sitting in one of the couches, Picker in the other, his bare feet up on a lacquered oak log coffee table.
That's what CNN is saying, Picker said. And I want to come and apologize, Stanton said. You heard about my friend, the one who died?
Picker nodded.
She and Henry here spent last week compiling this.
And he took the Picker file out of a brown envelope and handed it to him.
She died because she thought I was going to use it against you. And I might have, though I hadn't made up my mind yet. I might have. And so I wanted you to have it. It's the only copy left. We destroyed the others. I wanted you to have it because it might help you to know what others are going to be digging after and maybe finding, and because I probably shouldn't have sent these folks off to do it in the first place. I'm really sorry.
Picker had been scanning the file as Stanton spoke. He flipped it aside now.
You're a musician, right, Governor? He said, nodding upstairs. We could hear his son stop and start, working hard at the Mozart. You know how when you're learning a new piece, you'll hit a passage, a little thing, a bar or two, and say to yourself, shit, I'll never get that sucker. And you work at it, you sweat over it, you become a little crazed by it. Then suddenly, it falls into place. And you're still a little crazed by it. You can't stop doing it. You're in love with your ability to do it. It feels so damn good. You may even start neglecting the easier parts of the piece and search for other tough passages to master. It's sort of an addiction. I've warned Philippe about that because... He paused, gathered himself. Because that's how my life has been. It's what speculating in oil leases was like. What politics was like. I did it for the pleasure of the challenge. And things always seem to fall into place. I'm not so sure it's a particularly admirable way to live.
Stanton nodded cautiously.
Yeah, it's a danger. When you do it for it, not for them.
Jack, I never did it for them, Picker said, his dark eyes fierce on Stanton. I was stunned by the harshness of this. It was a startling thing to say.
It appeared we were in for an interesting evening. That was why I quit the first time. Part of it, at least. Because I knew that everything up until then had been all about me.
He got up from the couch, came around in front of us. And I could do anything. I could handle any passage. I could make a fortune. I could win an election. And the thing about cocaine was, it only reinforced that. It made me feel that anything I wanted to do was the right thing to do. You ever try it?
Yeah, once, Stanton said. Freaked me out. Made me too speedy. Also, I have a kind of screwed up, sensitive nose.
I loved it, Picker said, then looked at me. Reggie Du Bois was wrong, though. I couldn't handle it either. It was the first thing I'd come up against I couldn't handle, and that was really what fucked up my marriage, not anything else. I knew after Reggie saved me, after he found me and Renzo together, that I had to quit being governor. Truth was, I wasn't doing a very good job of it anyway. I had to quit and get my life together, and I did. My sons saved my life. It's the most basic lesson, right? Giving to them saved me from my own selfishness.
He paused, looked at me again. So, is Renzo pretty far gone?
He's hanging in there, I said.
Good, he said.
I can't say I ever knew him very well. It was just a coke thing. I mean, the stuff made you feel so... like the hair on your arm was a sexual organ. He touched my arm. And you know, since I could do anything, since everything was permitted, I did that too.
You don't have to, Stanton interrupted.
No, I'd better, Picker said, sitting back down. I have to. I did do that.
and I still don't quite know what it means. It wasn't a high-brain activity. It was something my body did when stoned. I walk along a street, and it's women I look at. I've been dating a really nice... I suppose I'll have to tell her now, too. Hell of a price to pay. He shook his head.
No one needs to find out, Stanton said. Reggie won't talk, Renzo won't talk.
Picker eyed him closely. I had no intention of ever taking this as far as it went. I felt an itch. I figured I'd put a toe in. I liked what Harris was doing. He was closer to right than you were, or so it seemed, although I realized when it got going that that was mostly appearances. He was still doing his poli-sci class. It was a vanity campaign. But I figured, I'll do it for a week. I missed politics, the rush, when you move them, right, Jack? It's better than making money. He paused, leaned back, began to drift away from where he was headed. That's why a guy like Larry Harris couldn't ever be president. You need someone who knows the emotional part of the game, the symbols, the theater, how to use the power. And you also need someone who really knows the issues, not like Larry, not academic fantasies. Someone who knows what's doable.
What was this? I had the sense this was some sort of valedictory.
I wondered if Stanton was picking up on it. Undoubtedly he was. But I couldn't see his eyes, only the side of his face. He had the big ears on. That was clear from the intensity of the silences. He was pulling the story out of Freddy Picker, who had his knees back up on the coffee table now, and his hands clasped around them.
Could I have said no to Martha Harris when she asked me? Picker continued.
I guess I could have. But I saw how vulnerable you were. It was very tempting. I could see the whole scenario laying out just perfect for me. Though I guess, on some unconscious level, I still wasn't perfectly secure that what was past was past. And that's probably why I did the blood thing.
It was great politics, Stanton offered.
Picker laughed. Amazing, wasn't it? I just blurted it out. I really hadn't planned it. And it worked for me on a lot of different levels. I figured, okay, if I'm going to do politics seriously again this time, I've got to give something instead of just getting that rush from them. But there was that other level, too, the one I wasn't quite aware of. But I found out soon enough. He unclasped his hands, pulled down his knees, leaned forward. In fact, I was jolted by it. By reality, I guess. As soon as they put the needle in my arm, it's amazing the tricks your mind can play. All those years out of the business, I'd watched as politicians made fools of themselves. Gary Hart, John Tower, you. And I'd wonder, whatever could they have been thinking about? And then, there I was. He shook his head. There I was. I hadn't really blocked the past. I just refused to consider it. The things I did. He paused. He shook his head again, in amazement, it seemed. The things that would be considered scandalous if the press got a hold of them. Those things were so far in the past, so distant, not quite real anymore, just barely remembered. And they had so little to do with who I'd become. It was like silly that I could be destroyed by them. They weren't me anymore. They'd only been a moment, and that moment was less important, less a part of my memory than, what, than the years I spent on the board of the North Florida Art Institute? But this was potentially lethal, and so humiliating, everything I... And when I put that needle in my arm, it was like an electric shock. Why am I doing this, I thought. This is nuts. And then I began to obsess about the blood. I added up the years since Renzo. 14 years. That's a long time, right? I searched my mind. Hadn't my blood been tested a dozen times since? Wouldn't they test for that? But maybe they didn't do it if you didn't ask them to. Maybe it was a privacy issue, given gay rights and all. Was it possible that I'd never actually been tested for AIDS? The word had impact. He let it hang in the room. He got up, got himself another Orangina. Brought us Diet Cokes. I tried to push it aside, he said. I smiled for the cameras. They took that stupid picture of me giving blood, but I couldn't push it aside.
I guess it symbolized a whole bunch of things. I mean, what right did I have to be running for president anyway? What had I ever done to earn a seat at the table? He stared at the ceiling. He shrugged up at heaven, then looked at his hands. Then again, what did anyone else have going for them? Unknown politicians catch fire all the time. Who was Jimmy Carter? Who was Michael Dukakis? Who were you 3 months ago? Why not me? I did seem to be pretty good at it. Picker shook his head and frowned. He sat back down again and leaned forward, anxious to explain himself, and almost relieved, it seemed, that he was finally getting the chance. But the blood thing kept eating at me, he said softly. I assumed they'd test all donations, even, he laughed, from presidential candidates. But how long did it take to get results? And what if I did test positive, or some orderly decided to get rich by selling the scoop to the tabloids? Can you imagine? Yeah, I guess you can. But I was around the bend. I was sort of like Lady Macbeth, obsessed by the blood. I had to find out. But how? You couldn't just call up and say, "Hi, this is Fred Picker. Gave a pint the other day. Could you check and see if I've got AIDS?" It wasn't anything you could really ask staff to do either. I knew I was being nutty. I knew I wasn't being reasonable. And it kept building. Just before the rally in New Haven, I really freaked out, a total anxiety attack. I mean, I hadn't had one of those things since the day Reggie Dubois saved my ass in Coral Gables. But there I was, shaking, hyperventilating in the car, heading over to the Yale Bowl. I was 3/4 convinced I had AIDS, and the other 1/4 was furious I was acting like such a weakling. Lord of mercy, Stanton said. He had to say something. I stood up there in New Haven, Picker said quietly, and I didn't know what to do. Did you see it that night? Stanton nodded yes. You know what I was thinking about, standing up there? I was thinking about you. Well, sort of. I was thinking, they're gonna find me out. Even if I don't have AIDS, I'm fucked. They're gonna find me out, and then they're gonna do to me what they're doing to Jack Stanton. Picker wiped his brow with the back of his hand. The room was gently air-conditioned. It wasn't the usual Arctic southern overcompensation, and he was beginning to perspire. It suddenly seemed so cruel, what they were doing to you. I mean, I haven't been a great person in this life. I've done a lot of stupid, selfish things, and running for president may have been one of them. But I didn't think I'd done anything that might remotely merit the humiliation, the viciousness. His voice trailed off, his eyes clouded over. It was like some sort of pagan ritual, the way they were ripping you apart. And I'd been kind of getting off on it, feeding it even. At least until that moment in New Haven. And that's when I realized, Stanton probably doesn't deserve it either. Well, I thought, he deserved it some. Stanton glanced over at me quickly, sensing that I was betraying him. I may have been, but Picker wasn't in any shape to notice. He was staring off into space, running a nervous hand through his hair. He was still back in New Haven, lost in his story. I didn't know what to do. It was unimaginable. All those people waving posters with drops of blood. I mean, can you imagine drops of blood? I wanted some room, some time to think. So I tried to calm them down, and, of course, the exact opposite happened. Every last thing that came out of my mouth got them even more worked up. It was an order of power I'd never even imagined. It was like some stupid fairy tale sort of curse, a King Midas thing. Everything I tried to shut it down only made it bigger. And I didn't have the courage to really shut it down. They were so easily led. I began to think that even if I was okay, even if my blood was clean, I wasn't sure I really wanted to do this. I could never live up to their expectations. I could never give them what they needed. He lowered his head and wiped an eye. I had come to expect that any politician I admired would be like Jack Stanton, larger than life, as formidable in the flesh as he appeared on television. But Freddie Picker wasn't. He was, resolutely, life-size. In every respect but one, he had a parlor trick. he could perform brilliantly, instinctively, for the cameras. He didn't seem to have any higher purpose than that. He didn't seem to know much about politics. What Picker realized in New Haven about the desperation of the crowd, Stanton had known from the womb. Jack Stanton also understood, intuitively, that the real challenge was far more difficult than simply meeting their expectations. It was about exceeding their expectations. It was about inspiring them. If you couldn't do that, you were Millard Fillmore. It was a very tough game. There were only two or three winners per century, and a fair number of the losers were burned at the stake. Or disappeared from memory. And the Picker phenomenon was evaporating before my eyes. So I called the hospital the next day, he was saying now. I told them I'd been anemic in the past and was feeling a little tired, and I just wanted to see if the blood had been tested, you know? They put me on hold. He laughed, as if I were a normal human being. You know how it is, Jack. When you're governor, they never put you on hold. But I waited and waited, and it was awful. Finally, the nurse came back on and said that, yes, they checked it, and no, there was nothing unusual about my blood. Everything was fine. I think I exhaled. But everything wasn't fine, he said. The words were coming faster, just cascading out of him now. In fact, it got worse. I felt even more trapped. I began to obsess about the drugs. I drove myself crazy, making a list, trying to think of all the parties I'd been to down in Dade. Parties just crawling with jerks who might give me up. And then there was Renzo. Who was Renzo, anyway? Had he told anyone? Would he tell someone now? Would he tell the National Flash? I got up every day wondering if this would be the day they found me out. It crowded out everything. You saw how much trouble I had keeping up with you during the Geraldo debate, right? It became impossible to think seriously about what I was doing. I was running for president, and all I could think about was my imminent national embarrassment.
Tell me about it, Stanton said.
But Jack, the difference was I was in over my head, Picker said. You'd been preparing for this forever. At least, that's what I read. I just jumped in. It was more than a lark, but it wasn't quite serious either, if you know what I mean. I hadn't prepared. I didn't really know the issues. But most important, I hadn't thought about all this stuff. And after New Haven, it became the only thing I could think about. So when we won New York, I made the announcement I was going to come home and consider what was best for the country. I was trying to come up with a way to get out before they found me out. And Jack, I'd like to thank you for coming here tonight the honorable way you did. He turned to me. Henry, I'm not even angry. You went snooping around my past. Better you than most anyone else. Anyway, you've given me the excuse to finally do what I'd been trying to get up the courage to...
What?
Stanton asked, impatient finally. I'm dropping out, Picker said.
Jesus,
Stanton said, not surprised.
Are you sure?
Picker laughed. Yeah. You know how I said that all the things they'd hang me for, all my sins, were so far in the past that it seemed they'd happened to a different person? Well, I've come to believe that my political ambition is part of that, too. Something dangerous that should have been left in the past, like cocaine and the rest. The idea that I could be invincible, that anything I wanted to do was okay. That's an adolescent thing, right? I look at my boys and they... He stopped. The thought of his boys seemed to stop him cold. I figure the press'll find me out. They'll be all over this story, right? But maybe I can preempt them a little, give them part of it, and they won't go find the rest. I really don't want them to find out about Renzo. But Jack, the bottom line is still, I'm a national joke, right? I don't see any way to get around that. And I still have to explain it all to my boys. He frowned, then stared down at his hands. He seemed paralyzed, palms up, futile on his thighs. He looked up at Stanton, his dark eyes sharp again, his tone hardened. No matter what I do, Those motherfuckers are still going to find the rest of it, aren't they?
I couldn't see exactly what Jack Stanton did at that moment. It must have been something with his eyes, a twitch, a wince, a premonition of a tabloid headline, a glimmer of the agony to come. Whatever it was, Picker caught it, and seemed to implode, shriveling up on the couch, knees up, shoulders shaking slightly, uncontrollably, arms over his head. Stanton was up and across the room before I fully realized what had happened. He gathered up Freddy Picker, who curled in, burying his head in Stanton's chest, and he rocked Picker for what seemed a very long time, occasionally kissing him on the top of the head, until, slowly, the former governor of Florida regained his composure. All of this transpired without a word, with barely a sound.
"Governor," Stanton finally said, "I don't know if you're a drinking man. I'm not much of one. But I think we could use a small jolt of bourbon just about now."
Picker disengaged himself from Stanton's embrace, went to a cupboard, and brought out a bottle of Jack Daniels and three glasses. There were napkins in the cupboard, and he blew his nose with one. His eyes were wild and bloodshot. His hair was all over his forehead. But somehow, he hadn't lost his dignity.
"Jack," he said, "I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but you seem so impervious. Not sitting here, you seem like a normal guy, but how do you wake up in the morning, like in the middle of New York when they were pulverizing you? How do you just get up and face the world knowing they're going to tear your lungs out today, make you seem like a crook and a fool and a liar, same as yesterday? I'm curious, because it's a skill I'll probably be needing."
"I don't really know," Stanton said. "There just doesn't seem to be any other option for me. Nothing else I really can do. And yeah, I'm sure a big part of it is ego sickness. You call it an addiction, you're right. But that's not all of it. I do love it. The part you talked about, moving a crowd. And the strategy too, the game of it. But I don't think I'd be baring my butt for random whipping by that self-righteous, hypocritical pack of shitbirds if I didn't believe that you can, on occasion, make people's lives a little better. I know it sounds corny, but I still get all excited when I come across a program we've done that actually works," he said with a genuine enthusiasm.
He stood up, getting ready to go.
"I mean, have you ever been to an adult literacy class? Grown-ups trying to learn how to read? You talk about New York, you know what comes to my mind? Not the primary, I already forgot that. What I think about is this little adult literacy program up in Harlem. Henry and I visited it once."
He turned to me, eyes glistening.
"It was the day we met, right, Henri? It was just pure glory. It was like going to church."
Picker stood too now.
"Jack," he smiled, "you may want to reconsider dropping out tomorrow."
"Yeah, well," Stanton paused, blushed. "I've been thinking about that."
"Truth is," Picker said, leaning against the door, hands scrunched in the pockets of his jeans, "this wouldn't have lasted much longer even if I hadn't been carrying around all this extra luggage. I'd pretty much run out of things to say. I didn't know what else to tell them." He laughed.
"I'll bet that never happens to you.
Freddy, you know what I was thinking, watching you that night in New Haven?" Stanton said then. "I was thinking, that's what I should have been about. That's the campaign I should have run, but I didn't have the courage."
He paused, then, needing some physical punctuation, put his arm straight out on Freddy Picker's shoulder and looked him hard in the eye.
"See, it doesn't really matter why you did what you did. You raised the game a notch. You created a standard of, candor that the rest of us are going to have to deal with now. That's a real good thing for the country."
"I appreciate that, Jack," Picker said, "even if it is unadulterated bullshit."
They hugged in the doorway.
"Bullshit'll grease a lot of doors," Stanton said. "The real test is what you do when you walk through them."
"Anything I can do to help you through this, Freddy? Anything. Right?"
"I know, Jack," Picker said.
I'll remember that. The governor whistled a sad country tune as we walked down the gravel path to the station wagon. He didn't say anything as we drove to the airport, but as soon as we hit the tarmac, he said, "So, Henry, you still want to have that meeting?" "Yeah," I said. 10 o'clock at the mansion tomorrow. He whistled his sad song again as we walked toward the plane, drifting through the voluptuous North Florida night. And then, in his effortless, understated way, he sang the chorus. I can still feel the soft southern breeze in the live oak tree. And those Williams boys, they still mean a lot to me. Hank in Tennessee. I guess we're all gonna be what we're gonna be. So what do you do with good old boys like me? You know why I love that song? He asked. Probably the line about the Williams boys, I said. Not bad, Henri, he said, tossing a big arm across my shoulders, gathering me in. Not bad at all. See, the rednecks will always pretend otherwise. But everyone who comes up from around here knows, it's never just Hank. The picture ain't ever complete without old Tennessee. I was awakened by the smell of coffee. Daisy was bustling about the place, at ease, at home. She saw me stretch and came over to the bed. I don't want this taken as a precedent, she said. You're going to have to make coffee, too. Whoever is up first, okay? But I guess you had a rough night. It was an amazing night, I told her. So Stan lives for the upteenth 40th time to fight another day, she said. You think the term dumb luck might apply here? He probably sees it as perseverance, I said. But Libby was so completely right, he never has to pay the bill. Even when he wants to. He was ready last night, he was going to quit the campaign, and Picker just wouldn't let him. You think this is what people mean when they talk about destiny, she said, and laughed. Pretty pathetic stuff. You sort of want destiny to be something grander. She poured me a mug of coffee and brought it over to the bed. So what are you going to do? I'm packing for... Where, Jamaica? I asked. Wherever destiny ain't. You sure? She asked. Henry, don't do it for me. It's okay if you want to see it through. Nah, I said. Too much water under too many bridges. It could never be the way it used to be. Maybe that's all to the good, she said. Maybe you'll be better at this if you don't do it so worshipful. You want me to do it? I want you, she said. I don't care what you do. But it would be nice if we had some politics to talk about in between all the mushy stuff. There's all kinds of politics, I said. I might be better off spending my time helping Bill Johnson run for attorney general over in Alabama. I could help too, she said. I could do some killer positives for him. I love you, Daisy, I said. Love me, she said. Love my ads. Stanton was upstairs in the mansion, a sanctum I'd rarely penetrated. He had a small office up there, a desk, a television, pictures of Susan and Jackie, a picture of himself taking the oath of office, a bookcase filled with classics of Southern politics. V.O. Key, W.J. Cash, C. Van Woodward, T. Harry Williams on Huey Long, many others. There was a gray love seat just off to the side of the desk, facing the television. Susan was sitting there, and I joined her.
Thanks for last night, Henry, the governor said.
He was dressed for success, wearing a blindingly white shirt and his red and blue and gold striped tie. His navy pinstripe suit jacket hung on a doorknob. Susan was ready for prime time, too, in a blue cotton suit with a beige crepe blouse.
Meant a lot to me, your being there. Pretty incredible, huh?
Freddie called me this morning. He said he talked to his boys after we left. Batted 500. Older one seemed okay. Younger one took it pretty rough, slammed the door on him. But I'll bet you anything they'll smooth it over. He'll be on the air soon, he said, glancing at the television. CNN, muted.
So what's on your mind?
I'm resigning from the campaign, I said.
I don't accept your resignation.
Look, I just don't feel comfortable about this anymore.
About what?
I couldn't quite say,
I spoke to Richard, he said. He's back on board. And I'm putting him in charge, campaign manager. He'll be right here, in this office, within the hour. Howard's going back to being consigliere. I'll keep Adler around, peripherally. He has his uses, but he'll answer to Richard. And look, we can bring Daisy back if you want, too. That's not what this is about, I said. Then what is it? Libby. Libby's test, I said, searching for some concise way to tell him it had all been just too much. Even after all the time we'd spent together, I still found it difficult to just cut loose, speak my mind. My chest was tight, my throat constricted. You flunked it. Oh, for Christ's sake, Henry, he said. This ain't the Boy Scouts, this is... Wait a minute, here he comes. Picker had gone to Tallahassee. He didn't look too good, but his body language was determined, proud. He stood there alone, his boys weren't with him. He was wearing a dark suit, a blue button-down shirt with narrow stripes that didn't work too well for television, a muted tie. He took a yellow piece of legal paper out of his pocket, but didn't read from it. All right, he said. Today I am ending my surrogate campaign for the presidency. There were groans. People were shouting, why, why? Susan got up from the love seat and moved around behind her husband, an arm across his shoulder, her cheek resting atop his head. Picker tried to smile. I know some of you are thinking this is deja vu. We've been this way before, and we have. And I was right the first time, back in 1978. I'm not cut out for this work. I'm not qualified to even pretend to run for the presidency. Someone jostled the CNN camera. There was mayhem. People seemed to be rushing everywhere. When Martha Harris asked me to continue her husband's campaign, I was so honored, I didn't stop to think about the consequences. That was thoughtless of me. I'd like to apologize. Why aren't you qualified? Someone shouted. Because I knowingly broke the law when I was governor, he sighed, and plunged ahead. At a time when a lot of people were experimenting with drugs, I did too. Actually, it was more than experimentation. If I'd just been messing around, that might have been forgivable. But I lost control of myself. What sort of drugs? Cocaine, Picker said. That was the real reason I quit in 1978. That's what caused the problems in my marriage. But I cleaned myself up. I put it behind me. I put it so far behind me that I almost forgot it ever happened. But it did happen, and it seems obvious that it would be wrong for me to continue this campaign. I was a fool to think I could ever... There was a fleeting, barely discernible patch of silence. The reporters were nonplussed, disarmed by his apparent candor once again. Picker sensed it and seemed to gain confidence. He moved to fill the dead air. So anyway, I don't think there's much more to say. I'm pretty embarrassed, he said. But he didn't seem embarrassed. He was back performing his old parlor trick, more alive on television than off it. The pack would be after him soon enough. They'd muck around the Picker scandal and pull every last morsel off the bones of his candidacy. But he wouldn't be humiliated on camera, and that represented no small triumph. God, Stanton said. It's frightening how good he could have been. It was almost as if Picker heard him. He'd been starting to move away from the microphones, but stopped. There's one more thing, he said. I want to thank Jack Stanton for being aware of this situation and not taking advantage of it. I know I'm not in a position to make a recommendation here, but I've gotten to know Governor Stanton a little better these past few weeks, and maybe you should try to do the same. He may be the most misunderstood man in American politics, but you can come to your own conclusions about that, and that is all I want to say, except that I'm sorry, and goodbye. There were six lines into the phone on Jack Stanton's desk, and instantaneously, every one of them lit up. The intercom, connected to Annie Marie at the State House, buzzed. Stanton cupped the phone, spoke to me. Are you still having doubts about this? Yes, I said. Take messages, he said to Annie Marie, then to me. I thought you got it, Henry. I thought you understood. This is about the ability to lead. It's not about perfection.
Okay.
I probably would have leaked the file to someone, and I'd have felt real slimy about it, but you know what? The bottom line wouldn't be any different. Picker was going down. It was only a question of when.
And how, I said. He might not have been so kind this morning if you'd been the one who pushed him off the cliff.
Okay, fair enough. But Henry, what are we doing here? He asked sadly, shaking his head. We're arguing over how many politicians you can fit on the head of a pin. Are you trying to say you suddenly discovered there's such a thing as hardball, and you don't have the stomach for it? And you're squishing out on me? Come on. I know you too well for that. We've been through too much together.
Too much, I agreed. I looked over at Susan. She was, for once, leaving the heavy lifting to Jack. She knew it was the only way to close the deal.
The question you've got to ask is, what are the options? He said softly, almost warmly, still patient with me, his blue eyes locked into mine. Only certain kinds of people are cut out for this work, and, yeah, we are not princes, by and large. Henry, you know this better than anyone. You've watched Larkin, you've watched O'Brien, you've watched me do it. 2/3 of what we do is reprehensible. This isn't the way a normal human being acts. We smile, we listen. You could grow calluses on your ears from all the listening we do. We do our pathetic little favors, we fudge when we can't. We tell them what they want to hear. And when we tell them something they don't want to hear, it's usually because we calculated that's what they really want. We live an eternity of false smiles, and why? Because it's the price you pay to lead. You don't think Abraham Lincoln was a whore before he was a president? He had to tell his little stories and smile his sheet-eaten country grin. He did it all just so he'd get the opportunity, one day, to stand in front of the nation and appeal to the better angels of our nature. That's when the bullshit stops, and that's what this is all about. The opportunity to do that. To make the most of it, to do it the right way. Because you know as well as I do, there are plenty of people in this game who never think about the folks, much less their better angels. They just want to win. They want to be able to say, I won the biggest thing you can win. And they're willing to sell their souls, crawl through sewers, lie to the people, divide them, play to their worst fears. You played to their fears in Florida, I said, trying to stop the torrent. You did too, he said. You never said, oh dear, we're not being fair to poor Lawrence Harris. You never said, this is morally repugnant to me. You know why? 2 reasons. First, your blood was up. Like it or not, Henry, you're a warrior, and we were at war, and you wanted to kill that pious fucker just like I did. Only not literally, which shook us all up. Made all of us doubt ourselves a little and give Picker the impetus for his move. But the second reason is more important. You knew I'd make a better president than Harris. You knew it. You may have had your doubts there for a few days about whether I'd be better than Picker, but you saw him last night. A very decent guy. Smart, good instincts. But a president? No way. He's just barely a politician. I mean, in the end, Henry, who can do this better than me? You think there's anyone out there who'll do more for the people than I will? Think about all those other wonderful possibilities. Consider Larkin and Osseo. And ask yourself this. Is there anyone else out there with a chance to actually win this election who would even think about the folks I care about?
I care about the McAllisters, I said.
I do too, he said, glancing quickly over at Susan and calculating that there was no concession to candor he could make here, nothing he could do but tough it out. If I stayed with him, I would have to live with that. I was thinking, I said then, about maybe going over to Montgomery and helping Bill Johnson get himself elected Attorney General. That stopped him. But only for a heartbeat. He was, as always, much faster than me. All right, if that's what you want, he said. But do you know how long Billy's been talking about running for AG? You know how totally convinced he is those Peckerwoods will never vote for a black man? And say he does run. Say you help him win. What then? You know what the Attorney General of Alabama does? He gets unsightly billboards removed. He sues the power company, unsuccessfully, always. And he sends Snopes's to the electric chair for knocking over convenience stores and sodomizing their granddaughters. Henry,
We are talking about the presidency of the United States here. Are you with me?
He might also keep the trees clean, I said with some heat. He might keep some black kids from getting lynched. Stanton was surprised by my stubbornness. So was I.
Look, Henry, Susan interrupted gently. We're going to have to go out there in a few minutes and do this thing. The whole country is going to be watching. So we better spend a minute thinking about what Jack should say.
I nodded. Henry, come on, Stanton said, stretching his arms out across the desk toward me. His voice caught slightly. His eyes narrowed, burrowing deep, searching my consciousness, desperate to make a stronger connection. His brow, his nostrils, the veins in his neck, his arms, his fingers, everything was reaching out, everything was focused on me. I knew this moment so well. I had seen him do it so many times. He could talk all he wanted about an eternity of false smiles. His power came from the exact opposite direction, from the authenticity of his appeal, from the stark ferocity of his hunger. There was very little artifice about him. He was truly needy, and now he truly needed me.
We've worked so hard together, Henry, to get here, he pleaded. And it's there for us now. It's right there. We can do incredible things. We can change the whole country, not just Alabama. If we win this thing, you don't think Bill Johnson's going to want to come to Washington himself? He can be Attorney General of the United States. Not at first, maybe, but down the road. That's why he came up to New Hampshire, to make sure I'd remember him when the time came. And it's going to come, Henry. I can win this thing. We are going to make history. Look me in the eye and tell me it's not going to happen. Look me in the eye, Henry, and tell me you don't want to be a part of it.
Jesus, Henry, he said. You want me down on my knees? I can't do it without you. Don't leave me now.
He hesitated, searched my face for an answer.
You're still with me, aren't you? Say you are. Say you are. Say it.
He stopped and suddenly smiled. I had trouble reading that smile. He was nonplussed but confident. He wasn't conceding anything.
Oh, come on, Henry. This is ridiculous. You gotta be with me,